I'm going to spend a few minutes talking about the Tapper Frequency Hop Spread Spectrum Radio Project. This is a status update. Last year, we presented the program, the design criteria, and more detail than you would ever want to know on the radio design itself. Where are we today? At the last DCC in October, we had the first bare boards run, and they showed up a good 6 hours before the DCC. So next year, of course, we'll be careful not to waste so much time. The focus in the last year has been on the digital processor board. This design is essentially a software-like radio. The receiver and transmitter are DSP-based and under control of the software. And that essentially means if you don't have the processor running, the radio can't do anything. And so we've spent all our time working on the digital processor board. Virtually all the functions parameters, all the status and the VLSI devices are controlled by registers under control of the processor. So if the CPU's not working, nothing's working. We have done a little bit of work on the RF board. It turns out we're using a PIC chip to control the RF portion of the board. And so Bob was able to get some test code written and on the PIC. And we could use that to program the synthesizers for the frequency hopper. And that testing looks pretty good. In the frequency hopper, we use two voltage-controlled oscillators, and they basically alternate each 10 milliseconds. We program one, and it takes about 6 to 7 milliseconds to stabilize. And while it's stabilizing, we're using the other VCO, which is already stabilized previously, as a channel. And then we switch over to the first VCO, and by bouncing back and forth, essentially, we can transmit on a new channel each 10 milliseconds. And while the VCO is offline, it's settling to a new channel. The current settling time is measured at about 6 milliseconds. We simulated it and got about 6.1, 6.2, and our measurements are just right on the model that we simulated. The spectrum of the VCO looks very good. I think it's adequately clean. It met all the noise criteria. We sat down and calculated how much VCO noise we could tolerate, and the measured VCO with no other digital functions running on the board easily meets the criteria. The most significant noise we can see in the VCO is the reference sideband, which is about 120 kilohertz away from the carrier, and it's about minus 60 dBc. So this is the spectrum of the VCO. This is obviously not hopping. The spectrum analyzer we used is an analog analyzer. The scale here is 10 dB per division and 20 kilohertz per division going across. And the sidebands are just off of the analyzer display. This is about 1.022 gigahertz output. And the analyzer is an analog analyzer, which means that it drifts fast enough that it's really hard to take pictures with high resolution of the spectrum, because by the time we complete one sweep, the analyzer itself has kind of drifted off about 3 or 4 divisions. We verified with counters and some other things that it's the analyzer drifting and not the VCO. So we stopped working on that and started working on, this is the processor board. And there's a lot of stuff on it, so the processor board's about 5 feet wide and about 4 feet high. Now it's about 4 inches by 6 inches. This board contains a 68360 microprocessor, and it's running at a 25 megahertz clock rate. It doubles that internally, so internal it runs at 50 megahertz. There's 2 megabytes of flash memory. Each of these is by 16 wide, so in fact we have a full 32-bit bus between the flash and the processor chip. And then this SIM up on the top is a 4-megabyte SIM. So we have 4 megabytes of DRAM and 2 megabytes of flash on the board. Over here we have an Ethernet chip and the transformer for the Ethernet. This is the RJ45 connector and way too many LEDs. This board is operational. We uses a 5 megahertz clock, and then we multiply the 5 megahertz up to 25 with a PLL inside the chip. What we've got, the interface here is a BDM interface. If you're familiar with Motorola, Motorola puts all the stuff to debug a microprocessor on the chip itself, and that means that a really cheap development system can do a whole lot of stuff and doesn't cost anything. The nice thing about it is when you pull off this cable, essentially the BDM disappears from use, and so you have a debugger that's quite powerful built into this board, and it's been absolutely invaluable. Okay, this is where the Qualcomm convolutional encoder decoder goes, and this is where the Harris digital costless loop DMOD goes, and then there's a pair of A to D converters for the I and the Q channel. That's on. They cost a lot of money, so they didn't give me a board with those chips on it when I had to debug the software. This is the whole radio right here. This is the RF board. Here you can see the PIC, and the PIC, this PIC is up on a couple of zero insertion four sockets because it's been off on and off of that board about 12,000 times maybe. And here you can see this is a the VCOs, pair of VCOs that, I'm sorry, these are the two VCOs here that are hopping. This is a frequency synthesizer chip, and it's a dual channel synthesizer. And we phase lock the VCOs to the reference frequency, and the PIC goes in and talks to this chip every 10 milliseconds and bangs and alternates channels so it can synthesize and lock. And we verified that we can move band edge to band edge in just over 6 milliseconds. The RF comes in here. We go through a directional coupler so we can measure forward and reverse power, and those voltages go into an A to D converter and digitized and go into the processor. What it allows you to do is essentially get a swept SWR reading on your antenna as the synthesizer goes through, so you don't really need any test equipment on the 900 meg side. This version puts out 100 milliwatts. We have a 1 watt max and PA chip, but it's not on this version of the board. These are a couple of helical resonators that we use for the RF filters, and then this is a 85 megahertz IF frequency SAW filter that we use for the receive IF. And there's a Motorola down conversion chip. It's a really neat chip. It comes out of a cellular radio system, but at 900 megs, it's got about 5 dB noise figure. It's got a mixer, buffer amp, and 23 dB of conversion gain. So it's a low noise RF amp, down converter, all on a single IC, and it costs about $1.50 or $2. So it's a pretty neat part. It comes down, is mixed down to 85, go through a post amp through the SAW filter, and then we go into this Harris chip. The Harris chip is the IF chip. It has a limiter, a two-stage limiter. Then it goes into an IQ DMOD that takes the 85 meg IF down to baseband. So out of this comes out two analog signals, I and Q at baseband, and they go pair of connectors to the digital board. So this is the RF board. The VCOs have been tested, and Bob's starting to work on parts of the other test. In normal operation, this board is plugged on top of this board, and this connector mates with that, but we can throw a ribbon cable between them and open them up, because it sure beats trying to get your 2-foot-long scope probe up inside of here on the wrong side of the board. This is the digital board with the Qualcomm and the Harris chips on it, and so that's what it looks like fully completed. And then you can see the cable here going off to the BDM. Yes?
How long does it take to switch over from RF to
the estimate is it takes about 100 microseconds.
100 microseconds. How much
the target rank on the same frequency? All of the details are on the website, and there's including timing diagrams and number of bytes and everything. It transmits for 10 milliseconds, receives for 10 milliseconds. So essentially it spends 10 milliseconds each slot, and it changes frequency each 10 millisecond slot. So it hops at a 10 millisecond rate. We can get, it takes about six hops to get a complete 1500 byte Ethernet packet spread out amongst the hops. And here's a close-up of the RF board. I don't know if that's any clearer than the previous picture. You can see the VCOs and see the SAW filter here. These SAW filters we found in a catalog, they're used in a PCS handset. And so we're fortunate that the people who invented that SAW filter in front of us got to bump the quantities up into the 50 million a year range before we showed up. So it gets the price down. That SAW filter is about 600 kilohertz wide. It has extremely good group delay properties. We're not completely filling out the width. Right here is a temperature compensated crystal oscillator, TCXO. This sets the channel frequency on the radio. That's what the phase lock loops are locked to. We have some tricks in this unit where we actually frequency align the receiver to the transmitter, so we don't require that they be on exactly the same frequency, even though it is a QPSK modulation. And this is where we're debugging all the software. You can see the board, the digital board here. It's this little tiny thing, and then there's the BDM. We went off and selected the FDSI toolset. It's a commercial compiler, assembler, linker, debugger, BDM interface, and it's all graphical. And it was a good choice. We didn't want to really spend time getting the toolkit up and running. We'd rather spend time working on a radio, so that's what we did. And it's under test here. It's actually fully operational. I'll talk about the status of the software. To talk to all these registers, you need a kernel on the radio. So we ported a preemptive, prioritized multitasking kernel called Xinu, which is in the public domain. Source code is freely available for any use whatsoever. So we've ported that and have it running on the board. We're running out of DRAM. It's a lot easier to debug code when it's in DRAM than trying to debug it when it's in Flash. It's real tough to set breakpoints in Flash. The reason we chose this stack is that Douglas Comer at Purdue wrote a TCP/IP stack that runs on top of this kernel. So we have that TCP/IP stack ported over, and it's up and running. We had to rewrite the Ethernet, serial device drivers, timer initialization code, and then fix about 50 compiler errors. So this is up and running on the Ethernet interface. We have a full gateway router built in and a complete host interface built in, and that's operational right now. So we can fire it up and essentially ping the board from Ethernet. The other thing is that we have a complete SNMP package ported also on the board, and it's up and running. What SNMP is the Internet Simple Network Management Protocol, and it allows you from the Internet side to go out and look at all the parameters on a radio and count number of errored packets, number of input errors, output errors, and all of the different statistics. The device driver for the Ethernet interface contains a whole lot of statistics. There's a local console on this version. This board doesn't have the serial interface. A test board that we got from a company called Atlas had a RS-232 interface on one of the other channels. The 68360 has six serial channels built onto the chip, and so we have a few left over. We rewrote the local console code, and that means when we power it up, we have a Unix command prompt that comes out of the radio, and you can do outbound pings, inbound pings. You can do processor status and look at all the processes, where in memory they are, what their priorities are, all that kind of stuff. You can look at the route tables. You can change the route tables. You can look at the ARP tables, all of that kind of stuff. To start debugging the VLSI devices, what we did is we implemented a UDP daemon, and it allows us on a Windows 95 box hooked up to the Ethernet port to essentially launch UDP packets into the board, and that will cause the board to either set device registers on all the RF chips or read back the contents of the registers, and we can display them on a PC. And it's sitting in a little timer, so we have a window and we can watch all the registers and all the devices update in real time on the PC just by bombarding the radio with UDP packets. And, oh man, you talk about a wonderful debugging aid to be able to look into this radio without using any of the debugger resources. It's really great. The nice thing about having a kernel and a stack on a radio is this thing was like six lines of code. Once you have a kernel, you just do a listen on a socket and it's all done. We use this commercial tool set. The price of the tool set's in the $4,800 range. Tapper was able to arrange an at-cost deal with the supplier, and we got a couple versions of the package. substantially lower price. The SDSI was good enough to essentially donate that stuff to Tapper at cost. However, one of the guys in the team is going to be porting all of the software to a GNU development environment. And he has a Linux box, I guess, that he's doing it on. It's a non-graphical debugger for BDM. He's got that running. And we're going to port it over to the GNU compiler, linker, assembler. We're going to release the source code for the radio with the radio. We're also going to release the source code for the development environment with the radio, so that you will be able to do software development in C with all of the tools, and we'll put that probably on a CD-ROM that we ship with the radio. We're also working on a non-BDM Ethernet loader, which will essentially allow you to go in and load code to the radio. Greg Ansley is working on that, so I can't comment too much on it right now. So what do we have to develop? One of the things you have to do with a radio is you got to provision it. You have to tell it what its Ethernet address is. You have to tell it what its IP address is. You've got to set the subnetwork mask. You've got to say where's the default gateway, because this radio is, in fact, a router in addition to being a radio. In the code right now, these are all in a config.h file, but we're going to write an HTTP 0.9 daemon, which is really basically just does a listen on a TCP socket. And HTTP 0.9 is pretty simple. It's got the two verbs, get and set, and they're basically ASCII strings, so it's a trivial protocol. What this means, when you get the radio, we'll supply a default IP and MAC address. You don't even need to know the MAC address, because there's an ARP resolver already running on the radio. And you just will point your web browser to the default IP address on the radio, and the radio will talk to your web browser, and you go type in what IP address you want to use and what MAC address you want to use and all of that, and set it, and then that will burn into the flash parameter area on the radio, and you will have configured the radio. So it should be fairly easy to bring this thing up and configure it. And then last but not least, we actually have to write the radio code. So there's a lot of work left yet to do on this thing, but still there's a considerable chunk of it up and running. The kernel, the stack, and the SNMP manager all put together is about 110 kilobytes, so it takes about 5% of the 2 megabytes of flash space. So I think we have adequate space left in the board. This device is kind of what I call an Internet appliance, in that it's fairly small, has no moving parts, it's extended temperature range components, and a single 5-volt supply, and essentially an Ethernet IP interface on one side, and a number of serial ports on the chip. And I have a feeling that since we're releasing all the source code, a lot of people are going to want to take it and tweak it and do different things to the various serial ports on the 68360. The 360 has built into it hardware to do HDLC, to do ISDN primary rate, to do a bunch of things right in the hardware. And so there's a lot of configuration options. We could come out with versions of the board, so not too much. So that's basically a brief status of where we are. A lot of code's been written and a lot of code's running, but we still have ways to go on the RF part of the design. Right. Thank you. Questions? Yes. No, the ports basically don't go anywhere. We're using most of the pins for radio functions. The 360, no I/O pin does one thing on a 360. Every I/O pin does 3-4 things. And we have stolen every single I/O pin we can get our hands on the 360 to go off and control devices on the boards. So in the radio version of the board, the ports basically aren't available, because we're using them to toggle bits on encoders and decoders and things like that.
Do they go off onto that header?
No, they do not go off onto the header. They go off as parallel I/O ports, but some of them stay on the board. That header is only signals between the two boards, because we only had a 50-pin header. So a lot of those pins don't go to the header, because they're talking to chips that are on the same digital board. So, but what's a new board? If you have the artwork for the original board, you can turn a new board. And it just takes time, money, people, talent, CAD tools.
We're thinking about that, but that won't happen until the digital board and the radio.
That's right. Our priorities are to get the radio working. Lower on the list is things like turning the board for another project, porting development tools, all that kind of stuff are lower on the priority list. Again, if you're interested in the details, look at the Tapper website. the paper describing the engineering details in a great amount of details on the Tapper website. Papers describing the motivation for the radio and its performance characteristics are there too.
How much caffeine do you take per week?
Well, let's see. This one's about been about two all-nighters a week.